This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin 2011.
Thanks for coming to the early session. So we're here today to obviously talk about mobile. We're talking about challenges and opportunities in higher and secondary education. We always like to lead where we're going to end up. So just so you know, you don't have to take notes. This presentation is downloadable at the link above. That's clients.mcenter.com/hyedweb11/Doug. The back channel, we put up the appropriate tags. And then if you want to get in touch after the presentation with either one of us, my email's on the screen, our Twitter handles are on the screen. You can get in touch that way, or just come up after the presentation's over.
So the question, you know, why am I here? I was the lead developer for our mobile site and also for our mobile app that I'll talk about in a little bit. We released this in late August 2010, so we've got a good solid year's worth of data that I'll talk to you about.
Why I'm here talking about mobile today, as of Q4 of last year, we got asked to work on our first mobile project at MStoner. Since then, we've touched about 9 different mobile projects, most notably the two that have launched are Trinity College in Hartford's mobile site, that's m.trincall.edu, and UIC's mobile site. We partnered with their communications team to get that live, so that's m.uic.edu. I got to say, you know, I've been with MStoner for about 5 years, and this is hands down the piece of the web that I'm most excited about working on. It's a lot of fun. It's different. It has kind of a Wild West feel to it, in that a lot of the conventions that are being worked out now for higher education are brand new. So here's the outline for our presentation. We're going to talk about the opportunity itself, the content piece of it, the design piece of mobile, the coding challenge, and then finally measuring it. So, you know, setting some goals and metrics at the beginning of a project that you can use to measure success as time goes on. So one of the reasons that Tiffany, I talked about being excited about mobile is this idea of what it's doing. You know, it's the strategic level of technology. Mobile technology is helping people find what they need wherever they are when they need it. Very transactional. You know, it's really about utility. And the second reason is that there's something happening, a shift happening right now in how people look at the internet. We're still kind of on the front end of it, but, you know, so you guys know, in Q4 of last year, the sale of smartphones and tablets eclipsed the sale of desktop machines. So I think that signals a kind of shift that we're going to see an exponential rise in use of mobile devices and mobile visits to websites. Little piece of data from last year, or January of this year, is that only 9% of Carnegie classification institutions out of about 4,500 in the United States, only about 9% actually have mobile sites at all. So that's another reason you guys should be interested in this is, you know, as the people working on this, you have an opportunity to get into this sphere and be one of the first people to the table with a mobile site. That's 91% of institutions or professional schools don't actually have a mobile-friendly site yet. Another reason to really be interested in this is mobile includes probably several things that you're already good at. So if, you know, in some capacity in your job, you probably touch the strategic end of things, you probably touch the design end of things, you probably touch content in some way, and you probably touch technology in some way. So you're thinking about issues already that touch the mobile sphere and can influence the work that you do as you dive into this.
So, like I said, we launched in August of 2010, so we have about 14 months of stats that we can throw up at you here. We have about 130,000 visits to the site, over 100,000 unique visitors, and everybody spends about a minute or so on the page visiting 2 or 3 pages. And that was one of the things that we really wanted to focus on, was that we have an automatic redirect. If you go on your mobile phone to www.wm.edu, it kicks you to our mobile site first. And if you go to any internal page, you get to the internal page. But for the home page, we wanted to take you to the mobile site and try and offer you content that we thought you might be interested in first. But luckily, not everybody's just clicking go full mobile site and leave the page. So We were glad to see that. But another interesting stat that we've come across since we've launched this is we've seen an almost 80% increase in mobile traffic to our mobile site over the past year. So it's growing, it's coming, and it's not stopping anytime soon. And another thing that we've been taking a look at is what devices have been visiting our mobile site. About half of them are iDevices of some flavor or another, and another third are Android devices. And this really helped us to figure out what was going to give us the most bang for our buck. What were we looking for to either develop mobile apps for and want to make sure that we're supporting all of these different browsers with our mobile site itself. So we want to make sure that it looks okay on a text-only BlackBerry in addition to looking nice on the latest iPhone. So, and to compare that with some of our main site statistics, we get about 8 million visits a year on our main site with about 2.5 million unique visitors. And of all of that, the mobile traffic is a pretty small percentage of it. It started out in 2009 being like Google couldn't even figure out how much it was. To 2010, it was about 2% of the traffic. And last month, it was about 5%. So it's doubling every year. And as it keeps going, I think it could easily be 10 or 15% of the traffic in the next couple of years. And another really interesting fact is we were worried that, you know, maybe the new mobile site would take away mobile traffic to our main site, but it doesn't. It's actually the second largest source of traffic after Google. So it's good to see that this content is relevant, and it's also providing more references into the main site.
Yeah, I think that last statistic is one to really pay attention to, because, you know, we led with that idea that you're still on the front end of mobile site development. But I think that acceleration is something to take note of. That's about a 50-fold increase over a period of 2 years in traffic. So I think that number is really going to explode over the next 5 or 10 years. Now is really the time to be thinking about this. Let's talk a little bit about content as it relates to mobile. You know, based on our keynote speaker yesterday, went ahead and pulled some of the mobile content guidelines on the WC3 site. They lead with the strategic layer of what mobile content should look like. Mobile page content should be suitable, so ensuring that your context and length is appropriate for a smartphone. It should be clear, using clear and simple language, and using an appropriate length. A general rule of thumb that I found by looking around at some different sites is about 175 words is appropriate for a smartphone. So, you know, and also thinking about content as it relates to an app versus a site, a lot of the questions that we get from current clients still relate to this issue of, should we dive into an app first or a site or both? The thing is, it doesn't have to be an either or, it could be a both. I would say that, generally speaking, you always want to lead with the site development. The reason is, doing the site first, what you're saying is, you're acknowledging that people will likely investigate by launching the browser on their smartphone first. So rather than go out to the App Store and seek your institution, they're probably just going to fire up their browser, you know, look up the name of your institution and go straight to your site. But there are pros and cons to each, so we made this little needs matrix to kind of take a look at that. The pros of doing a site versus an app are that you get immediacy. You get no special download required. You get a delivery for transactional and timely content like RSS feeds. And this is, again, probably the first place that a casual user is going to look for you on a tablet or a device. The cons to a site are, you know, you can't provide a robust interactive experience. You're limited to the phone's bandwidth. You're limited by the current network. If people are on Verizon or AT&T and you're in a remote location, maybe they can't get access to it at all. You got to give them a reason to check back. You know, a lot of the mobile sites that are being developed right now are very lightweight. So incorporating timely content is a way to give them a reason to come back and check on the site. Why you would dive into an app is that, you know, you have much more robust interactive possibilities. We're going to take a look at something that that Creative Services at William & Mary built in a second. The files are stored on the phone instead of downloaded by the browser. It's better suited for diehard users who are going to actively go out and seek the institution in an application store. And then the cons, of course, are there's a special download required. You have to develop the application for multiple platforms. So instead of developing, you know, one set of HTML5, CSS, 3, you have to develop the application for multiple platforms. And then the lastly, you know, the casual user, such as maybe the new prospective student, is not as likely to go and seek you out and download an app.
So as Doug mentioned, our first foray into the actual mobile app was something called Dress the Griffin. So one of our more famous alumni, Jon Stewart, on The Daily Show, when he learned in 2010 that we had picked a new mascot, and it was the Griffin, he decided to call it a rare pantsless-tailed eagle. And so we decided that we would solve this pants problem by giving him a shirt and shoes and pants and swords and hats and all kinds of stuff like that. So since we released this in February, we've had about 5,000 iOS downloads and over 2,500 Android downloads, which when I first saw those stats, I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. That's not really that many. But considering that our active alumni and current student base is probably about 100,000 people, maybe a third of them have smartphones, to have 8% of those people downloading something actually turned out to be pretty good. So we were pleased with how this turned out.
So, you know, great example of app development because, you know, a user takes the time to download this and they get access to all of these different, you know, rich graphics and they can build all kinds of different combinations of outfits and locations. So not something that you could easily accomplish just by building on a site.
But we did have to build it twice, which was one of the downsides, as we mentioned before. But back to the mobile site. So when I first joined the creative services team, there was definitely a sense of urgency that we did want to have a mobile version of our site. But we sat around a table, we all whipped out our mobile phones, and we're looking at our main site, and we're like, actually, this doesn't look all that bad. It doesn't horribly break or anything like that. So if someone is really looking for a particular piece of information, they can find that on our main site. But we still wanted to have something offered that was optimized for mobile. And one of our team members, Tina Coleman, had just gone to a web managers meeting at Gettysburg College and had heard about the work that Dave Olson was doing with West Virginia University and the mobile web OSP. So that ultimately was what we decided to end up picking, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. To walk through the site a little bit, most of it is driven by RSS. I love RSS for this. It's perfect. It helps you keep updated content. You just kind of set it and forget it, and you're good. So we have our news feeds, our athletic feeds, our alumni news are all fed through this, and they're constantly updated every 3 minutes. And if the user wants, they can click on that and get the full story. We just give them a little snippet so they can decide if it's interesting or not, and if it is, then they can go and spend the extra time to go to the full site and see the full story. Another thing that we wanted to really focus on was the branding content that we have. Our main website has a big photo banner right at the top, and so we really wanted to focus on having photos as featured in our mobile site as well. And we also wanted to focus on our student research. That is, our Ideation magazine is a research magazine that we publish every couple of months. And so we wanted to bring those stories again from RSS. And then the last is our student blogs that Mallory Wood mentioned yesterday morning. And those are really popular content. It's a really great way to help prospective students relate to the current students that we have, and they've been a very popular bit of content. And so we wanted to make sure that we're taking this well-established, well-received content and providing that on the mobile site. And another thing that we have a lot of is social media stuff. So we have YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Foursquare are all linked on there. And we pull again through RSS. I'm a big fan of that. And people can see the latest photos that we have, the latest videos that we've had. And so if we have an event going on, we'll stream those photos to Flickr. And those photos end up straight on our mobile site. So if someone's just sitting around waiting for convocation to start, they can look at the photos of the graduate students walking in and stuff like that. So it's a great way to keep the content really fresh. And last but not least are some utilities that we've thrown in here. There's a map, which you can search for any building on campus. You can search for services in this. You can't really quite see it, but it says, you know, the campus post office and some of the various cafeterias are all in this one place that you've picked, and you can click, and it'll give you directions using Google Maps. We have an about section, which is pretty much the only static content on the entire site. It's just a little blurb about William & Mary, and then some links that go on to back to our main site for information about applying and some stats and rankings and things like that. We also have our campus directory, so all the public information that you could find on the directory, you can also find on the mobile site. If a student's looking for where is my professor's office, what's his phone number, they can look it up here. And the last thing that we added about a month ago was search. It was actually kind of me being lazy because I wanted to use search, and I didn't want to go, and I was on my mobile phone, and so I decided, well, it's a lot easier to just build it and skin it to be a mobile version rather than trying to go to the full site for this. So put it up there, and that's actually become a relatively popular little bit of content there. So I was glad that we decided to do it.
So what you just saw was a great simple framework for a low maintenance mobile site. You know, Tiffany mentioned how much of that content is fed by RSS or social media platforms. One of the other hot trends in mobile design right now is to do a responsive design. And what that means is you're employing coding practices that scale down for a tablet or a smartphone. You're using media queries to detect the width of the browser and to reposition elements. So what you see on the left here is a great example of a site that launched recently, done internally by Agency ND Notre Dame. And these guys launched a great responsive design for the main Notre Dame site. If you look at the site on a tablet, it scales to the width of the tablet. If you look at on it on a smartphone, it scales down as well. Another example where you can see this responsive design in place is Loyola University Chicago. So that's luc.edu. And they actually do it a little differently than Notre Dame. If you look at it on your phone versus a desktop computer, and then you check out the code, you're going to see that what Loyola does is they use JavaScript to detect the browser, and if it's mobile, there's a second set of JavaScript that fires that turns off page elements like large images. So what it's saying is, I know that you're on iOS 5 or I know that you're on Android, I'm going to turn off all of these heavy elements that are going to slow you down as you try to get to content. This is something that I really see as a content strategy issue. In the same way that Tiffany is saying, we're going to try to provide the top utility, and we're going to try to provide the top RSS content. In these examples, what you see is they're saying, we're going to provide you with exactly the same content on the mobile platform that you get on the desktop computer. So it is a little different. There's kind of a third strategy, and this is a project that we have in flight right now at MStoner for FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology. And that's sort of a hybrid where you're setting up multiple publishing targets in the content management system. So what you'll notice if you compare FIT's mobile site to, which actually will be live in the next few months, but you can check out the presentation and sort of see where we're going with this. It's the idea that we're borrowing a lot of the navigational elements from the main site, and that we're configuring the CMS to publish a lot of the navigation elements and the content on pages to two targets. So, you know, top to bottom on the mobile site compared to the regular site, you have a lot of the same things. You have a masthead, you have a task-based navigation, you have audience gateways, and you have sort of information for prospective students, the sort of standard navigation for higher education about academic submissions, campus life. And then we have sort of niche interests for mobile audience at the bottom. So that's pieces like linking to the museum at FIT, news and events, library, and then the gallery. So the way that multiple publishing targets works is that they actually sort of have two instances of the site set up, but OpenText is being configured to publish assets to both the mobile site and to the main site. So it's a way of getting, you know, we set up a complicated system of galleries that they can tag with different tags in their main site. And they said, you know, we're such a visual place, we want to make sure that transmits to the mobile device. So we're configuring all of their mobile galleries, or all of the galleries on mobiles, to pick up the same assets from OpenText. So this is another site that's now live. So this is m.trincoll.edu. This is one that we recently helped Trinity College with. The thing I like about the content strategy for these guys is when we sat down with them, we looked at their main site architecture, we thought about several of the examples that are live in higher ed, and we saw what is the information that's most relevant to everybody, you know? So not just prospective students, but current students and faculty. And we created sort of a new architecture that's based on finding places through that campus item, finding people, which is fed by PeopleSoft, their database for tracking faculty members. We have courses integrated with their Moodle system. So a prospective student can use that tab to sort of check out, you know, what the offerings are in anthropology, and that's all fed by Moodle that they've already built. They can check out news in Trinity Today. They can go straight to the Athletic site. There's a little bit of investigative content in About and Why Trinity. And then finally, to show alumni that they're valued, we created an alumni tab. But you compare this to a typical site architecture for a main university site, this is the bare essentials. You know, this is the information that's really most useful to the broadest audience. And I really like that part of it, simplifying it down to the bare minimum that's needed. So let's talk a little bit about design in the mobile sphere. This for me, when I was first getting into mobile last year, I was thinking about this as one of the best things that I was most excited about is a lot of the best practices for web design that you've already learned are the same for mobile. It's all still HTML and CSS. It's just smaller. So a lot of the things that you know about containers and div tags, all that stuff applies. You know, most universities and colleges are required by law to be compliant. Everything you know about color compliance still applies to mobile. And then the last thing, descriptive links begin or end every page. So one of the things that you notice more so outside of higher ed is that the location of navigation varies. You know, in higher ed, it typically is at the top, though. But you want to make sure that you sort of consider that you either want to lead a page with navigation or you want to finish it. An example of finishing a page with navigation would be something like Yelp. And then what to avoid. So some of the things that are a little bit different in mobile design, avoid very small clickable areas. These sort of practices are a reference to the W3 site if you want to go and check out their principles of mobile design. It's avoid very small clickable areas. So about 30 to 40 pixels is what you need to approximate a human fingertip, and that's what you're going for in a mobile site design. You want to avoid large images scaling down. So if you have a large image that's being scaled by the browser, you're limiting the bandwidth of the phone. And then finally, be ready to serve a text-only mode. So if somebody does have limited bandwidth, if the site isn't loading properly, if you followed best coding practices, you know, your alt tags are going to load the right language to allow people to navigate the site.
So the way that William and Mary ended up approaching the mobile stuff was that we wanted it to really be a complement to our main site. And as I mentioned before, we've got the big photo at the top, and we have some fun fonts and a lot of really cool graphical elements. And so for the mobile version, we wanted to carry those through. Same colors, the tans and the grays and stuff. We have some in-house designers that made some fantastic little graphics for us, and we also managed to pull in all of the photos from the news feeds and things like that to make sure that we could display those so people can get a feel that they are still on the same site. You don't want them to all of a sudden feel like, you know, they accidentally went to Yelp when really it's supposed to be your university's site.
So, you know, Tiffany's idea there is really integrating with the main site and extending the brand into the mobile sphere. And I think, you know, for FIT, you can kind of see where we're going with that. The FIT site has, we used a lot of duotones when we designed the main site to sort of reflect this global urban brand. And we're translating that into the mobile sphere by picking up a JavaScript that sort of randomly fires anyone somebody comes to the site, and it'll either pick up the purple, the blue, the green, or the yellow. So just a really nice finish that sort of relates it back to a prominent visual on the main site. I think there's another thing to consider when you're designing, and that's always going for currency. You know, you're dealing with rapidly changing trends in design constantly, and one of the things that's hot right now is big type. It's all over the web. And I think that trend happens to be particularly appropriate for mobile because you're creating big tags for people to click on, you know, 40 pixels or larger with large typography. So these two sites are not sites that M. Stoner worked on, but I thought they were great examples of sticking to that trend of keeping the type nice and big, really legible, really pops off of the page. So that's University of Southern California and Oregon State, both great examples of that really current look in mobile. You know, last piece of the design puzzle for me is always making sure that you're getting audience feedback. So not just relying on whims of, you know, we think this is the right way to do it, but putting this in front of audiences to say, we'll give you a few critical paths to follow. Show me how you're going to get there. Getting open-ended feedback from them, putting the design in front of them and saying, what do you think of this? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? And then lastly, comparative feedback. So putting your mobile site up against your peers, if they actually have one, and saying, what do you think of our site versus theirs? What do you like better about theirs? What do you like better about ours? And then just listening to audiences post-launch. You know, as Tiffany would probably tell you, people always have comments about how things are working or not working, and just making sure that you carefully consider what people say about the mobile site after it goes live. Another thing to consider is that there's increased support for web fonts in the different operating systems. So as of iOS 4.2, we're on 5 now, but as of 4.2, they added support for web fonts, and that represents such a great opportunity for design, because all of a sudden you're not limited to Arial and Verdana. You can go with Ziggurat and these beautiful sort of sophisticated design, different fonts.
So now delving into the coding a little bit, put the propeller hat on and go down 15 floors. But it's the same thing with coding as design. The best practices for coding carry through from the standard size to mobile. And so you just need to remember that you have a very small screen with very small bandwidth and very low processing power compared to a desktop machine. So the more code that you throw at this browser, the longer it's going to take for the person to download it, and the less enjoyable of an experience they have. If they have to wait 10 seconds for your page to download, they're going to be gone. They're going to go find somewhere else to look up the information. And so just to keep in mind, if you don't need it, don't add it. Don't add scripting if you don't have to. Don't add gigantic CSS files if there's only two or three lines that you really need. And just make sure to keep it simple. It's one of those adages that you hear all the time. And once you have cleaned up all of your files and made them as small as you think you can, have a tool like Yahoo's YSlow or Google's PageSpeed to check it again. Because there's usually something. You can optimize another image. You can compress another file and have stuff load even faster than before. A couple little technical tricks, something to always make sure you do with mobile sites, is to use the viewport meta tag. You can definitely Google it and see all the proper syntax and things, but essentially it makes sure that it zooms all the way into your page when it's loaded in a mobile browser. And it's not like a little tiny thing that's way up in the corner that no one can read, and then you have to double tap and zoom. And it just makes things a lot easier, and it makes it look like this is what you meant to be doing when you made the mobile site. Another one is browser detection. So you're going to be handling devices that are BlackBerry, that are just text only, all the way up to iOS 5 with the mobile Safari. So you've got a range of support of graphics and CSS and scripting and all that kind of stuff, and you can detect what kind of browser it is and serve up to them the appropriate content and give them the best experience that they can. One fun thing in HTML5 is something called form input types. So normally you have input equals text. Well, now instead of just text, you can have a date, you can have a telephone number, you can have a URL, or you can have an email address. And when you do these on a mobile browser, if you tap in there to fill in your telephone number, it'll pop up a virtual keyboard that just has numbers. So you don't have to, it's just that fewer clicks just makes the experience so much more pleasant for the user. And another sort of telephone-related one is, instead of linking to a web page, you can link to a telephone number. And if you click on that, it'll open it up in your dialer on the mobile phone. So it's just one less thing that people have to copy and paste or try and remember the number and then misdial it and all that kind of stuff. So These four things are just fun little extra touches that really make the experience a lot more pleasant for the user. And so, as I had mentioned before, we ended up with an open source product. The very first, or one of the first ones that we looked at was MIT had opened a, or had released an open source product that was geared towards mobile sites, and it was one of the first ones that was really geared towards educational institutions. But the benefits with mobile sites, or with mobile sites, with open source, is it's free. As long, if you have a developer that is comfortable enough with working with an open source product, this is the easiest way to get a mobile site online. And you can modify the code to suit your needs, and if you do, you can contribute it back. And it's just sort of a mutually beneficial project for everybody that works on it, that you figured out something cool, you can pass it on to somebody else, and they pass that another interesting bit back to you. So I'm a big proponent of open source. And what we ended up deciding to use was actually the Dave Olson's Mobile Web OSP, which was a fork off of the original MIT branch. This had a bit more documentation, a little bit more of an active community, and so if you're ever using open source stuff, you know that documentation is really important, unless the code is magically perfect, which never really happens, especially in open source. So within a day, in half a day even, we had a site set up. Downloaded the code, set it up on a virtual host, and plugged in RSS feeds, and we could have launched that day if we wanted it to be like blue and gray and stuff, but then we spent the other 90% of our time probably changing the design and updating the graphics and all that kind of stuff. But it's using the mobile web OSP is a great and pretty straightforward way to get something up quickly.
Yeah, last resource, she mentioned Dave Olson, the developer who created Mobile OSP several times. He has a blog. It's dmolson.com, and it's probably one of the best resources for mobile knowledge in higher ed right now. So that is definitely something that we would recommend checking out and bookmarking. And you know, he's done a lot of surveys. It's just really great content about mobile development in higher ed.
And so now into the Google Analytics a little bit. They recently added another visitor view that is mobile, which is, it'll tell you just it's an iOS device, or it's an iPhone actually, or it's an iPad or an Android device. And so it's a great way to really get a quick insight into what's going on. And it was a good way for us, as I mentioned before, to determine that we really should make sure that we have BlackBerry covered in addition to an iPhone and an Android, and it also helped us to realize that when we developed our mobile app that we needed to have both Android and iOS, because we'd be alienating a third of our user base if we didn't present an Android device. And another thing was measuring the different traffic sources. What was the most popular content? We realized that athletics was quite a popular one, and it would spike like crazy on game days, especially for football. And so we wanted to sit there and think, before we just had the news feed from the athletics website, so it was recaps of the games and what was coming up next, but we realized that people were probably going on game days to find out what the score was. So the athletics department has a Twitter feed which does do live updates for games, and so we interleaved the Twitter feed with the RSS from their news site, and that way you get some context for previous games and you're getting live updates while you're sitting there, you know, at work, or maybe not at work, watching the game. So, you know, it's looking at the analytics and looking at what the most popular content is really helps you decide, okay, we can probably pull this back off of one of the prominent spots on the page, or we need to add something else to this to make it more relevant to the user.
I think this was one of the pieces of data that fascinated me the most, because if you look at where people are going on the main William and Mary site versus where they're going on the mobile site, it's totally different. And I think that, to me, is possibly an argument against the responsive design approach, because the responsive design simply resizes the main site. And what this data suggests from William and Mary is that people use those two different things, the desktop site and the mobile site, in a completely different way. People are not going to investigative content as much on the mobile site. They're sticking to that transactional kind of content of finding a place or finding a person. Whereas on the main site, about 30% of the hits are to investigative content. So I think that is a good argument for doing a custom mobile site that you direct people to, because the data suggests that people would use it completely differently than they'll use your main site.
And another thing to support this was recently we added some special event buttons. So it was for orientation and for commencement for homecoming that we had last weekend. And that has been the most popular content that we've had on the site. It's had the most traffic, and it just emphasizes that people are looking for relevant information to their current situation. On move-in day, it was a Friday, we had like 5 times the normal traffic that we would normally have on our mobile site. And of that traffic, most of it was looking at event schedules. It was parents going, oh my gosh, where am I supposed to be? Where is my kid supposed to be at 2 o'clock? And so being able to present that relevant information to them right when they needed it and not having to look through their PDF or finding that sheet of paper that got buried under their kids' clothes when they were moving in is a real benefit to that mobile offers over a regular website. And a couple little interesting things were social media didn't really do so well. It was less than 5% of our traffic. And so when we needed to add buttons to our homepage, it had been that each social media got their own button on the homepage. We consolidated all of those down and put them sort of behind one additional layer. So they were sacrificed a little bit. But I think the reason for that is that people already have Facebook on their phones. They already have Twitter on their phones. They're not going to go to your website to find your Twitter to then read your Twitter feed. They're going to go to Twitter to read your Twitter feed. So we weren't too worried about that. It was a little bit disappointing, but we still have lots of engagement on social media, so it was okay. And another interesting one was where the traffic came from for us. It was just looking at the on-campus network, about a third of the traffic usually goes for the mobile, or for the main site is about a third of the normal traffic. So it's students and faculty, everybody looking at our main site. But for mobile traffic, it was only 11%, which gives us a good indication that it's people that don't have access to our wireless network. So it's parents, it's tourists from Colonial Williamsburg that's nearby, it's prospective students. And so realizing that we have a significantly bigger audience for our mobile site than our main site is just another way that help you shape the content that you have there. And then one of the things that I learned recently was that where your mobile phone says it is according to its IP address is not necessarily really where it's from. I was sitting in my office at William & Mary, and so I was in Williamsburg, Virginia, and I used one, there's a couple sites out there that will tell you what your IP address is and where it's supposed to be located. It said I was 150 miles north in Alexandria, Virginia, so not quite accurate. So you need to take a lot of the Google Analytics location stuff with a grain of salt. Just remember that it's not really necessarily 14% of your mobile traffic is coming from the city. It might actually be significantly more. It might be significantly less, but you just have to keep that in mind. And for us, the next step is releasing mobile sites for all of our graduate schools. And we're using the same mobile web OSP stuff and the same framework that we've set up before. We're just styling it a little bit differently and having it be a custom style for each one, which the benefit of CSS, all we're doing is tweaking the style sheet, so it's great.
Well, that just about wraps it up. We have a couple of minutes for questions, but I think the closing thought for me comes back to that idea of only about 9% of institutions in higher and secondary education have mobile sites. That really means that you guys are the future. You're here, you're interested in this. I'm excited to see what happens with this. And I would love to hear stories. So if you guys have launched a successful mobile site, please come up and talk to me afterwards. Or if you're planning it over the next year, I'd just love to hear how it goes. So again, you can download this presentation. We had a lot of links kind of running along the bottoms of slides with the visual examples. That's the URL to download it. If you want to comment, I'm sure some of you were tweeting as we went, hopefully all good. But the back channel, again, is right there for the conference and for this track. And then there's our personal information. If you prefer a phone, just come up and talk to us afterwards.
So I think we have a few minutes for questions, if anybody has one.
Early on, you showed the Notre Dame and the Loyola website. And you mentioned that on the Loyola one, they are running JavaScript to hide elements that are heavy. They would still have to download those elements before the JavaScript hides them, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah. So I mean, it's still a little bit heavyweight, but it's not when you're using JavaScript, it's not something you can avoid because it has to be client side.
Right. Tiffany, you mentioned that on your main homepage, you're you're doing an automatic redirect to your mobile site.
Right.
What criteria do you use to do that, and how do you handle a smartphone user that wants to visit your main page?
We have the browser detection going, so if it says that it's an iPhone or an Android device, then that's when we determine when we're going to send it. And so anybody that just goes to the main homepage, if it's slash anything else, they go straight to that page on our main site. But if it's only direct homepage traffic, we send them to the mobile site first. But there's a link that they can just go back to the main site if they want.
So like on an iPad, you can't go directly to your homepage.
On the iPad, we don't do the mobile redirect at all. It's not considered a mobile device as much because it has a significantly bigger screen and stuff like that. So
that's why I was wondering what the criteria is, because that's the same an OS detection would get that too.
But with the browser detection, you can tell, it will say that it's an iPad or not. I think there's a little, I don't remember exactly what the technical criteria is, but we can determine if it's iPad versus not. There's code in the mobile web OSP that helps you out with that.
The second part of that is a usability thing. Most mobile sites that we're designing now, we put a full site button kind of prominently either at the top or the bottom, because some people do want to opt out and they want to get to content that they know how to get to on the main site. So the full site button is a way to offer users an opportunity to opt out.
Yeah, we're kind of still debating with that, trying to figure if maybe going the other way around and get to detect that device, still keep you on that page, but then provide a prominent button that wouldn't otherwise display.
Right.
Get you over there, just a matter of preference.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
If someone lands on an internal page, is there a PR on the style sheets?
Not yet. We're working on it.
That's kind of a newer approach that we are starting to do as a conditional style sheet, because in a framework like the William and Mary site or the Trinity site, past about the fourth level, you are usually pointing people to content that's on the main site with a back button. So you want a conditional catch-all style sheet that's going to render content from the main site in the same kind of style as the mobile design. Does that make sense?
All the way in the back.
Surveyed your alumni at all about usage of mobile devices? And second, do you plan to at all integrate with, do you have an alumni community that has login and sort of features, and do you feel that there's any need to integrate those two together?
Right, we have an alumni button that's just the RSS feed from the alumni site itself. They're a totally separate entity from us, and they have an app that it is an iOS app that's My1693 that is specific content just for alumni. We don't do anything else with that. We haven't done any surveys of what the alumni think yet of the mobile site, but I'm sure that would be very interesting because they have lots to say. In cases where it's appropriate, I mean, that's sort of an evasive answer, but for the My1693 thing, it's a login-based thing where they can see things that are just very specific to the alumni association, whereas if it was just general content that maybe we could just pull into the site, then we'd be happy to do that and would love to have more rich content that's just available not behind a login. It searches the main website, which is the source of all of our mobile content. So it's just the Google custom search, skinned prettily. So it's another fast tool for doing the search. We're not right now. The link that takes you to the Google Maps will just send you. It passes along what the address is of the building that you were looking at and the name of it, and then you can use from Google Maps, just utilize the stuff that they've already built that has some geolocation stuff in it to help them find where they're looking for. Anybody else?
Hey guys, thanks a lot. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks.